Hello and welcome to Taking Care of Business. I'm Jackie Mitchell. Today we are talking about a revolution. It's the pet revolution. More than half Australian households own a pet. According to industry trends and predictions, the pet business will continue to boom unabated in the future. While the forecast is healthy across the board, certain segments in the pet industry are seeing a significant amount of growth. So today our expert panel of guests will talk about that growth. And we touch on things like the real food revolution, training, vet care, rescue animals, pet resorts, puppy farms. We cover the light and dark side of this incredibly booming industry. And today's show is made possible by our loyal friends at eView Real Estate. So the Australian Veterinary Association's Family Pooch Index, 50% of pet owners buy their dogs gifts for special occasions, and I am certainly in that 50%. I actually thought it would be higher. And trends, particularly a top trend, is about nutrition for your pets. Our first guest is Australia's leading expert in dog nutrition. From Doggydom, Kerry Bradley, welcome back.
Thank you, Jackie. Thanks for having me back.
Good. Oh, always a leading expert. I can't not invite back on the show. Now, Doggydom, a kingdom for dogs, or the realm of dog well-being. Is that right?
That's absolutely correct. So Doggydom is really here to help pet carers achieve the best possible well-being for their pets, particularly their cats and dogs, is probably my area of interest.
Okay.
And we do that really by sharing information, offering coaching services, and just giving good advice that helps them make informed decisions about their pets, because our pets can't make decisions for themselves.
Yeah.
So it's a big responsibility. So we do that about what they can feed their pets, how they can train their pets, and what kind of care they can give their pets that's going to increase the chances of them having a long and healthy life.
Now, I know you're very active in the industry, and if those that are listening, just before I forget, because sometimes I forget and guests get all carried away with the topic, they forget as well. If people want to follow your blog and get some advice, where would they find you?
They can find it at Doggydom, doggiedom.com.au.
And you've got Instagram and Facebook?
Got Instagram, Facebook, Twitter.
And they'll find all the links on your website.
They should find it under the Doggydom brand.
Cool. All right, we might put a link on our Facebook page for you. Now, how big is the pet food industry? I mean, it's a bit of a funny question because every pet needs to be fed.
Yeah.
But how big is it as an industry overall?
It's huge, Jackie. It's the pet industry overall in Australia, some of the stats that I've got more recently, is that it's a $12.2 billion industry. And of that, $4.2 billion is in the pet food industry. So it's pretty big, and probably the major players are around our manufactured and commercial pet foods.
Yeah. Well, there certainly has been a shift. It used to be that you'd buy your animal, usually cat or dog, you know, your whiskers or your can of Pal, and that would give them that awesome some dry food. And I know that I've engaged you to help me with my animals and recommended you to a lot of friends of mine, and it's been a great help. And I've completely changed how I feed my. I've got two dogs, as those that listen regularly will know. I talk about them all the time, They are well. They are very well and healthy, and it's about that prevention. I suppose it's not unlike a human body. I suppose if we feed good food, as my dad would say, you don't put sugar in a car to make it go, or water. You put petrol in, so you've got to put the right fuel in your for your system to go well. Is that the same with dogs, even though they're all animals, because they've got a different sort of system that they work, but does that have the same benefit?
They do, Jay. Although I really believe that. I think what people tend to do is go straight for the commercial bag of food, dry food, because that's still the biggest part of the market. But if you go to a doctor and said, well, I want to have a really great diet, they're obviously going to recommend whole foods for you. That's quite different with our pets. So why are they any different? They're a living creature. We've got, even though there's certainly differences from a species point of view, we're all living creatures that benefit from whole foods.
Okay, but there are obviously some things that dogs and cats can't have. So things like chocolate, we all know dogs can't. Can cats have chocolate?
No, cats can't have chocolate either. A lot of the things that dogs can't have, cats can't either.
Oh, okay.
So things like onions, grapes, macadamia nuts, a lot of dried fruits like raisins are also quite toxic to our pets.
I know avocado. I was shocked to learn about avocado. Yeah.
So some of these things, they're not going to have a reaction in necessarily every dog, but we can't necessarily tell which ones are going to have that sort of reaction. Yeah. But I'm sure our vet expert can probably elaborate on more on that too.
Yeah, is that because the animal and, the dog and cat, we're talking about dogs and cats in a minute, but their digestive system is different from ours, and how is it different?
It's quite different from ours in that they're carnivores, so both dogs and cats are carnivores. Cats are obligate carnivores, which means they must have a good source of protein and meat in their diet. Dogs are what we like to sort of call facultative. I knew I would stumble over that.
Just put your teeth back in.
Opportunistic carnivores, which means they can have a wide variety of foods.
Yeah.
So their digestive tract is much shorter and probably have a less of a higher acid in their stomach as well.
Okay, so that's interesting. So certainly not a plant-based diet for a dog or a cat.
Everything about a dog and cat tells you that they should really be eating meat-based diet, really, from their teeth right through to their gut.
Okay, well, I'm glad you mentioned the vet because our second guest, we've got a huge show today and lots of wonderful guests in the studio. And I'd like to introduce our second guest, Dr. Kelly Halls. She's the doctor gives it away that she's a trained vet. And she's actually locally, which was a complete fluke because she's a vet clinic with a difference. She's offering basic standard veterinary services, but she incorporates holistic and natural approaches to support the conventional veterinary treatment. Dr. Kelly Halls, welcome to Taking Care of Business.
Thank you, Jackie. Thanks for having me on.
Good to have you here. Now, what was Kerry was talking about? Can you elaborate on that a bit further about how important or not it is to feed certain foods to your animals?
Yeah, certainly. I think Kerry has really nailed it. I think it's incredibly important to feed a species-appropriate diet to all animals. We know, we know that if we try and feed cows grains, we get lactic acidosis and we get real problems in their health. Same thing with horses. We know if we feed our rabbits the wrong sort of diet, they get incredible dental disease, gut stasis, and they can die from being fed an inappropriate diet. And we do have to look at how an animal has evolved. And these animals, cats and dogs, have evolved as carnivores. And Kerry's right, their dentition tells us that they're designed to chew meat. They have no grinding molars, they have no ability to move their jaws laterally and to break down the fibrous matter in plant food. So their short digestive tract cannot digest it. And we need to appreciate that and feed them what they're designed to eat.
Yeah, we're lazy humans, aren't we? We just go for the shortcut. And this is the point of today, was not only to talk about the growth of the industry, but to create some awareness around it as well. Now, with your conventional vet, we all know what that is, but your incorporation of holistic and natural approaches. How did you get to that point? So where did that come from?
My personal path down, I guess, the nutrition pathway came from my own daughter. My daughter, ever since I started her on solids, had gastrointestinal disturbances, and it was a long path. I had a very miserable daughter, lots of tummy pains, diarrhea, a lot of depression and anxiety. And as I went down the pathway of trying to find what her problems were, she's got a bit of a wheat and a dairy and an egg intolerance. I did more human nutrition study. So learning about clean eating, if you want to call it paleo, if you want to call it whole foods, whatever it is, moving away from the processed foods. Once I put her on her correct diet, she is now the happiest girl in the world. Fantastic result. As I was doing all of this study, I kept thinking, well, why are we not following the same path for our pets?
Yeah,
we're told by our doctor to shop around the outside of the supermarket, get your meat and your dairy and your fresh fruit and vegetables, avoid the processed products in the middle. So why do we go to the middle aisle for our pets and get that bag of food? And I think it is a convenience factor, but it's a convenience in two ways. It's convenient to feed. It just sits in the cupboard and you can dole out that cup or cup and a half or whatever every day and not think about it. But it's also a convenience that we've been told by somebody else that it's the right thing to do. So we're absolved of that responsibility of thinking about what is logically the right thing for our pets.
Yeah, as I said, we like to take shortcuts sometimes.
We do.
With the you're working in as a vet, do you notice that when animals come in, can you tell how they've been fed? So it's about prevention. So those that are fed well and those that aren't, is there some sort of common thread or some patterns that you see in that?
I agree that the key to good health is always good nutrition. Mm. Not always. There are some dogs that are fed a highly processed commercial diet and they come in looking absolutely beautiful, you know, glossy coats, they're bright, sprightly, and they look really, really well. And those dogs know it, you can't pick it. I do believe, though, that with time and years down the track, if we don't address their diet, we're going to start seeing more of the chronic diseases coming in for that pet. Mm. It's a bit like us. You can see, you know, 13-year-old kids eating McDonald's every day and they look really, really good. But if that same person continues on, by the time they hit 40, they're going to look a bit average.
Yeah.
Same with our dogs.
Yeah. I like that analogy. How is, because you're doing it quite differently and you're based in Mount Martha, so in Benton's Road.
Yes.
Is there many other people like you around? Are there many other holistic vets around?
Unfortunately, I feel a bit lonely in my industry. Mm. Yeah, when I talk to my colleagues about natural feeding, I don't... there's not many out there that do agree with me, or they find it a bit hard to take that leap. So I am on my own.
Or there, you're a trailblazer.
I do consider myself a trailblazer. I do have other vets that work within my clinic, though, that are much aligned along that philosophy, which is really, really good. I don't have any... holistic medicine training myself. You know, I don't have any acupuncture experience or training or herbal medicine, but I have people who work for me that do. And so they bring in that holistic treatment. My passion is natural nutrition.
How do you find from a customer's perspective? I'm sure maybe you've lost some customers that think maybe you're a bit too hippie or a bit too out there, or have you not? Have you actually managed to convert them?
I don't think I have lost customers. What I make a big point of doing is never being judgmental. I never tell somebody that they're doing the wrong thing. If they've got a good looking dog and it's well and fit and they're feeding the processed bag of food, then that's fine. I'll introduce the topic to them, and if they look interested, we'll follow it on. But I'm not going to tell them they're doing the wrong thing, because they're not. They're giving their dog love. They're giving their dog, you know, good nutrition. They're doing the best that they can for their dog, so that's not bad. So I don't think I have lost, I can't even think of any clients that I have lost because of that.
Those running a small business, what you just heard Kelly mention, good on you, Kelly, because that is thinking about the customer, not about you. Congratulations for that. But also, I think then adding to that, you've added that your clinic has now become a bit of a destination. So you've got people travelling, because a long way to come and see you, because I know I got onto you through Kerry, because Kerry, as I said, is a leader, and whatever she tells me, I believe her. And I know she travels from Melbourne to come and see you. But you have you seen a growth in that area, that you've actually, you've become a bit of a destination?
Yes, that's right. And that's actually been the one thing that has stunned me most. I did think that I might marginalise my clients a little bit and some people might choose not to come to see me, but I'm stunned that people are coming to travel all the way to Mount Martha from places like Warrandyte, Ringwood, Croydon, Melbourne, West Melbourne. So I think people are seeking the information that I'm giving, and they're happy to travel for that. It's all good.
That's wonderful. Welcome back to Taking Care of Business. Now, that song is clearly a very old song, and it's a hot topic, and it's not buying dogs from pet shops. It's an area that I'm very passionate about, and I had to play that song because today we're talking about the light and dark side of this industry. And like any industry, there always are success and failures. And I think I mentioned to my panel of guests a little bit earlier, it annoys me that we always talk about rainbows and unicorns about any industry. And I think the failures and discussing those are as important as the successes. And we're going to talk a little bit later a bit more about the concept of puppy farms, but I thought I'd start with a little bit more positive side and talk about rescue dogs. And our next guest is a wonderful advocate. She is doing some amazing work. She runs Home of Pugs, SOS, which is a nationwide rescue organisation keeping pugs out of puppy farms. She's a member of Dogs Victoria and also is another local. We're doing some good stuff down here in the Mornington Peninsula, runs Mornington Lodge, which is a pet resort. Belinda Goyarts, welcome to Taking Care of Business.
Good morning, and thank you for having me on the show.
Thank you and your busy schedule to come and talk to us. The work that you're doing, we need people like you around, and so I just wanted to congratulate you, continue your wonderful work. It's something I couldn't do. I'd be in tears every day and feeling very depressed about some of the things that you get to see. But the Home of Pugs, SOS, tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, well, Pugs SOS was started a number of years ago because I have pugs and I occasionally breed pugs because I show them. Mm. And there was an advertisement in the paper for two female pregnant pugs who were ready to give birth, yeah, and he was selling them. Mm. So we rushed out and picked up these pugs on a 42-degree day heat behind Tullamarine Airport in the loading bay, and he had a car full of puppies that he was exporting. And the puppies, the two pugs were so pregnant that they actually, their waters broke as we were loading them into the car.
Oh.
$5,000 for these two pugs. Mm. And he didn't ask a single question about, did I know anything about pugs or puppies, just give me the money. Yeah. So that was my introduction to one of the biggest puppy farmers in Victoria, and the journey started from there, and Pugs SOS was born from there.
Oh,
it's a nationwide registered charity, and we pick up pugs that are advertised, entire pugs that are advertised, we buy them and de-sex them immediately to get them out of that puppy farm loop.
Yeah, and then do you keep them? Like, have you got?
We rehome them. Rehome to amazing. Them, right. We rehome 350 to 400 pugs each year to fantastic homes, and we have a wonderful network across every state of Australia that runs this, and foster carers, and it's an amazing team.
Now, why pugs? Why did you choose that as a breed? What is it about them that you love?
I was handed a pug at a dog show by a very good friend of mine who had to race off and catch the plane and to handle it for Best in Show. And she said, look, just wrap the lead twice around her neck and hang on.
Yeah.
And I flew around the ring with this gorgeous pug. She won Best in Show. I was so besotted, and I rang the breeder as soon as she landed back in New Zealand, and I said, send me a pug. And she sent me her daughter and another son, and it just went on, evolved from there, my passion for pugs. And people will tell you they love their dog, but then they get a pug and it just goes up another level. They adore it.
What is it about a pug that makes them so adorable?
There's this joyful enthusiasm, and they imprint on you, so they just adore you. And they're intelligent and they're funny. But our problem lies in that they are so incredibly difficult to look after. They molt 24/7, 365 days of the year. You cannot train a pug to sit on the ground and not be touching you all the time. They have to be with you. And that's not their fault. It's genetics.
Yeah.
The Chinese had them hundreds of years ago as a companion dog, and it was actually an offence punishable by death for anyone outside the Chinese family, royalty, to own a pug. But genetically, that has stuck with them.
Right.
They have to be with you all the time.
Now, what clues should people look for to avoid purchasing a puppy from a puppy farm? I suppose the clue would be buying it out of a back of a car at the car park at the airport, I suppose.
That is one clue.
Yeah.
Puppy farmers do make it very easy for you to get a puppy. So they will ship it to you, which is one clue. No registered breeder would ever consider shipping a puppy without meeting you first.
Good tip.
And you might well say, I'm coming out to meet you, and that all goes along swimmingly until the very last minute, and they go, oh, something's come up, my daughter's sick, I'll meet you in the car park under the Golden Arches. So that's always a sure sign that it's a puppy farm. They have wonderful websites, but you never ever get to actually see.
To meet them.
And good luck trying to get hold of that phone number anytime a week after buying that puppy, because usually they're disconnected. It's a prepaid number.
Right, okay, they're really good tips. Now, just quickly, you also run a pet resort, and it used to be a kennel. We used to say, so I would take the dog to the kennel. I remember when we were kids and we'd drive to Coldstream or something to put our dog in a kennel, but it's now called a pet resort. And this is one of the changes or the growth of this industry and how things have shifted. We talked about nutrition earlier with Dr. Kelly Halls and Kerry Bradley, who we've got here in the studio, which we'll come back to a bit later. But the Mornington Pet Resort, or Mornington Lodge it's called, isn't it?
Yes.
And how long have you had that for?
20 years now.
Wow.
I was a flight attendant and did a lot of international for Air New Zealand, and I could never find anywhere to leave my dogs that suited. So when I came back to Melbourne, I found this very dilapidated facility, but on a beautiful piece of land that looked just like New Zealand. I was so homesick. And I must have had a drink or something, but we bought it. And we I've staffed it and built it to somewhere I'd leave my dogs and my pugs. So to make people feel comfortable also, but there's air-conditioned rooms and lounge suites and televisions and their own gardens to play in during the day, and every guest is groomed and health-checked every day. It's fully staffed.
So over 20 years, what changes or trends have you seen in that industry?
People wanting cheap accommodation have now evolved to really putting the best for their dogs, and they're actually driving from anywhere in Melbourne, or we have a pickup service, but we have a lady who flies her two poodles over from Perth every time she goes to visit her family overseas to Mornington Lodge, and that is happening more often.
So pet owners are now more comfortable paying more money to look after their pets. So that's been a big change. And are you finding that you're busier than ever before, or has it just been fairly constant over 20 years?
It took 7 years to become well known, that every vet clinic and that sort of thing would recommend us, because we do cater to insulin dependent dogs and sick dogs, not contagious sick, but we because of our high staff numbers, we do cater to that. So people will travel, and yes, it has definitely. We are full all the time now.
All the time. It's wonderful. It's good. Now, we like to speak to the best in the business world, and we've spoken to Kerry Bradley from Doggerdom and Dr. Kelly Halls from Benton Roads Vet Clinic in Mount Martha. We've just been chatting with Belinda Goyart, who's Pugs, Home of Pugs SOS. Is it called Pugs SOS?
It is called Pugs SOS
and Mornington Lodge. Our fourth guest, who's very, very patiently waiting in the wings there, is Australia's leading dog trainer. Now, I think we couldn't have a discussion about the business of pets without talking about the training side of it. She's an award winner, and she's here from Four Paws Canine Training, Trish Harris. Welcome back. We've had you on before, and we loved you last time, so you always get a welcome back invitation. Good to have you.
Good morning, and thank you for having you back. I'm very excited.
Really good to have you here. Now, Four Paws Canine Training, you've been doing that for nearly 20 years, I think. Is that right?
17 years now. Yeah, it's nearly 20 coming years. Coming into 17 years.
So what changes have you seen over that time? We've just been talking to Belinda Goyarts about Mornington Lodge and the changes that she's seen over 20 years as far as the pet resort now, not kennels, but pet resorts and things. What changes in training have you seen?
Sure. So when we first started, we were a small training organisation, and people just wanted, their dogs to be, actually we saw people wanting more highly trained dogs. So people wanted the high-end obedience. They'd all come from some maybe club training, and they did want that higher end. But today we see a lot more people wanting just more companion animal training. So they just want their dog to come when called. They just want their dog to walk nicely on the lead, to have a sociable dog. And that's pretty much the trend. So we've moved away from people wanting very high-end obedience titles to that more companion animal training.
You're one of the first schools in Melbourne to use motivational based methods for obedience training. Tell us a little bit more about motivational based methods. What is that?
Sure. It's reward training with game and toys and tug. Many years ago when we first started, it was very compulsion based training, and it was sort of like an alpha hierarchy type training where the dog had to do things to avoid correction. We moved away from that, using more food rewards and also game. So we find that some dogs are very, very high driven. They've got a lot of drive. They love toys. They love game. It's a great engagement and a great way of building bond with the owner and the dogs, especially those dogs that do have such high drive. So we incorporated that into our training and use it as a form of reward for dogs.
So does that mean that you should never tell your dog off? Like, you get cross with it, but it's more about positive reinforcement. So if they're doing something you don't want them to do, rather than go, don't do that, it's more about encouraging the correct behaviour, is that?
Sure. Well, we always teach what we want. We always teach the dog what we want the dog to do.
Okay.
And then if the dog makes a choice that we don't want it to make based on experience, then we can certainly disagree. To a point, obviously. It's not about abusing the dog or harming the dog, but certainly, you know, telling the dog, no, that was not what we wanted you to do. But as long as you've taught the dog what you want first, that's the main thing.
Have you seen a rise in rescue dogs? So people coming with a dog that they haven't had since birth, but they're 4 or 5 years old, older dogs, having to retrain them. Is that a trend you've seen?
Absolutely. We have seen...
Which is a positive trend, isn't it?
Yeah. I'd say the last 5 years we have seen a spike in older rescue dogs coming through.
Right.
Absolutely.
And how do you go about rehabilitating any or correcting their behaviour? That would be difficult, I would imagine.
A lot of these dogs... Can I just change that? Some of the dogs come through with behavioural issues. Mm. That's probably maybe one of the reasons why they were surrendered in the first place. Owners will obtain these dogs, and they sometimes just want a simple, you know, just a dog with no problems, but they do end up with a dog with issues. It depends on the issue that we're trying to rehabilitate. So things like aggression, you know, reactivity, anxiety, severe anxiety is not something that you can treat overnight or, you know, after one session. It does require dedication and time.
Yeah.
So those things are a little bit more challenging. Nothing's ever impossible, but it's certainly a little bit more challenging. So it really depends on the commitment of the owner at the end of the day.
That's wonderful. We hope you're enjoying eavesdropping on this fascinating conversation, the growth of the pet industry. Yes, we've let the dogs out. We took them for a quick walk and they're running around outside having a lovely time as we're in the studio here on Taking Care of Business talking about the pet revolution. And we have an incredible panel of guests today. We have Kerry Bradley from Doggydom talking about pet nutrition. We have Dr. Kelly Halls from Benton's Road Vet Clinic in Mount Martha, who's the holistic vet, and she's doing some wonderful things there. We also have Trish Harris from Four Paws Canine Training talking about training trends, and we also have Belinda Goyarts talking about rescue dogs. And we're going to now get straight into the dark side. I really want to talk about this, and I really want this to be an awareness and an education session for anyone listening. And I truly believe most humans are not bad. I think the majority of us are inherently good, but I think that we are at times ignorant and ill-educated, which is no fault of our own, but just sometimes, you know, there's not enough attention to certain things. Well, today, this is one area that I don't think there's enough attention paid to, and I really wanted to use this show not only to talk about the growth of it, but also to talk about some real social issues here, and this for me is a big one. And Belinda Goyarts, I know you're incredibly passionate about this. You run Pugs SOS, but let's talk about puppy farms. Now, I was looking at some stats which are shocking. There are 130 puppy farms in Victoria. Only in Victoria, I was with Australia, but Victoria, they produce around 350,000 puppies per annum. And that's because people or consumers are supporting them. So they're still buying puppies from pet shops. I know there was a big hoo-ha at Melbourne Central, you might remember, a couple of weeks ago. And this is the power of social media. Someone took a photo of these, I think, were they pugs? No. I think they might have been.
Pugs, yes.
They were pugs, I think. In there, and people took photos and said that at night the cleaners could hear them crying and they were looked dehydrated and unwell. And Melbourne Central flicked it, and we all, and I was one of them, everyone got online and was sending, and we're banning going to Melbourne Central until this is fixed. And it generated this groundswell and attracted a lot of attention, which actually made them do something about it. I then went on and sent a letter to our Premier, because I believe that government, particularly Victorian government, should be banning puppy farms or have a lot stricter control over that. But Belinda Goyart, selling puppies, I know that you mentioned, you know, there's 3,000 plus puppies each year at $1,000 a puppy. That's a big business.
Actually, $1,000 is quite cheap. They really are getting to the $2,000, $2,500 bracket now. Because people are wanting designer dogs. And I think it's wonderful that dogs are such an important part of the family now. However, it's a terrible shame that there is such a continuing lack of awareness or disregard as to where most of these puppies are coming from.
Okay, so let's create some awareness. Listen carefully. What should people do and what should they not do? Give us some tips.
There are two very positive options when looking to add a family member to your home, a dog to your home. You can look at a rescue dog. Mm. And look, I understand a lot of people still want puppies, but there's a fantastic site called Pet Rescue where you can actually choose, I want small, medium or large, puppy or adult. Mm. And they list a number of organisations that have dogs available for adoption, sound, health tested, vet worked dogs. Or you contact the RSPCA, Lord Smith, Lost Dogs Home. But Pet Rescue is a great place to start
to
online.
Yep.
And the other option is definitely to consider a puppy that has come from a registered Dogs Victoria breeder. We produce 18,000 purebred puppies every year in Victoria, all health tested, and you get the lifetime support from a breeder who is passionate about their breed.
Yeah.
They will answer any questions. They've done all the genetic health testing and you are getting lifetime support from the breeder.
So another good tip is not to buy a dog from Gumtree or Trading Post.
They are all puppy farm
all
puppies.
Of them. There you go.
Registered breeders are not allowed to sell their puppies through pet shops, and puppies and registered breeders advertise their puppies on dogs online.
Yeah, just to add to that, Belinda, I think another great thing that pet owners can do is get a qualified trainer to select a dog for them, because even within breeds...
That's a great idea.
...we can have real variation in behaviours and personalities. So I'd really recommend getting a qualified trainer to help you pick your next pet.
Absolutely agree with Kerry too. We see all the trends that come through after the movies. So, Red Dog came out, we saw lots of Kelpies coming through and people getting these dogs because they see the well-trained version on the movie, but they forget that they are a working dog.
So, Trish Harris, do you get many clients come to you and say, look, can you help me actually select a dog?
Very few. Very few, sadly. I wish more people would call and say, look, we're thinking of getting, whatever breed. What do you think? We would be able to tell them, look, this is what we see coming through, or these are the personality traits that we see mainly with these dogs.
Or even better would be to say, look, we're looking at getting a dog in our family, particularly if you've got small children. I understand that a puppy, for the puppy to grow up with the small children, because you get a rescue dog, and we got our dogs, they were five, and one of them, our Kelpie, is obsessed by little things, whether it be a cat, a Jack Russell, a bird, a possum, about that size. We don't trust her around young children. We don't know. It's too big a risk to test it. So I understand that, when you've got a young family that you're wanting to be able to train the dog from a puppy. But for a family or to come to you and say, look, this is our family situation. This is what we do. This is how many are in the family. This is where we live. This is how we work. What sort of breed would you suggest? That would make more sense to me.
Absolutely. I wish more people did that. And those that do call me and ask, I applaud them, because they're doing their homework. They're actually asking the people at the forefront who are dealing with these dogs, especially the dogs that come through with issues. They're dealing with them. So, yeah, I wish they did.
I agree. I also wish they'd come to the vet and ask for advice on breeds to for their family and their situation. One of the things I usually recommend if I do get that question is please go to the breeder and see if you can find a breeder that uses behaviour and temperament as one of the conditions that they use to choose their breeding partners. I think that's something that's not looked at enough, and we see so much more anxiety and behavioural issues coming through. And unfortunately, it is propagated by the puppy farmers who are paying no attention to that whatsoever. They just want as many puppies out of the breeding dogs as possible. And so you get a lot of dogs with genetic anxiety coming out of those. Going back to the puppy farms as well, it's made increasingly difficult for people to know where puppies are coming from, because they'll often go to see a puppy and they'll go to somebody's home and they've got, the breeding mum and their litter there, and it looks like a nice family environment. What they don't know is that the puppy farmers have placed that litter at a friend's house to make it look nice and rosy, and they think they're doing the right thing. They come away from it and they've got no idea that they've supported a puppy farm.
Oh, that's shocking, but it's good to know. Let's talk about it. Belinda?
We find people say, I bought that puppy but I want to save it from the puppy farmer, or I've purchased it in the pet shop because I want to save it. But they're not going back and thinking, I've left its mother trapped in a shed, because most of these puppy farmers operate under the radar, in a shed to escape detection, 80 to 400 dogs in a shed. They won't employ staff because they can't, they're not meant to be there. So it's how can Mar and Pa Kettle feed and maintain even an average of 200 dogs? So it's filthy, it's cramped. Many of the adult dogs go insane from boredom and noise inside the shed. And every time you buy a puppy, you are saying to the puppy farmer, good on you, keep going, here's the money for
it's
that
cruel.
Puppy.
It's cruel, it's one word, it's cruel. Now, let's talk about some solutions. What can we do to fix this? What can we do to change this, Trish Harris?
I think education, first and foremost.
Yeah. So this discussion is valuable.
Absolutely.
Okay, number one. Number two, what else can we do?
Talk to the right professional. So your vet, your trainers, your rescue people as well. You get as much information as you can and find out. And I think Kelly mentioned about behaviour. You know, that's a big, big thing, because you get a pretty looking dog with really bad nerves and they're bred that way. And so they're bred for their looks a lot of the time. So we need to understand that people need to understand they need to get their dog based on behaviour and temperament that suits their family or their lifestyle.
I think one of the easiest fixes is just to exercise a little patience. People want a puppy on Friday afternoon and they want to pick it up on Saturday, and that's where they are fueling the puppy farm market. Okay. Because there's always going to be a puppy available on Saturday from a puppy farmer, but there wouldn't be from a responsible breeder.
I think the other thing for people to watch is there's an increasing trend of people to look for any information about a pet, whether it's to buy one or to care for one, online. And while that has some great benefits in broadening the breadth of information they have, we've got to be wary of Dr. Google. And that's why they should seek the professional services of qualified people.
Okay, that's really good. Dr. Kelly Halls, who's our resident vet here, do you find that as well? Like when people are coming in with their pets, do they discuss about getting a second pet, or do they have that discussion, or do they talk to you about how they found their pet, or is there any sort of conversation on sourcing?
Unfortunately, not before the purchase.
Yeah.
A few people ask, oh, I'm going to get another pet, or, you know, what do you recommend? And I do certainly give the advice of, again, a breeder that uses behaviour as a part of the way they choose their breeding partners. But most often I get the, oh, I've got a new puppy and this is where I got it from. And I am trying not to be judgmental, so I don't tell them that they've been naive and they've supported the puppy industry, but I do just introduce that topic. So, oh, so you didn't see the breeding parents, you didn't get any pedigree, or that paperwork is still in the mail. I said, unfortunately, it is probably that you have got a puppy farmed puppy. We'll do the best we can for this puppy, but it is disappointing.
Now, puppy farm has got, we talk about puppy farm, is there kitten farms, or is there any other sort of farms that have other...
Absolutely.
Animals?
Kitten farming is just as much as there is with puppy farming.
Really?
Absolutely. And again, just the pumping out of large numbers of kittens at incredibly inflated prices and not always very healthy.
And are there other animals that falls into, or is it just dogs and cats because they're the most popular domestic pet?
Absolutely. Rabbits and guinea pigs are the other one that we see, and I hear about them all the time.
I've
been to some of these properties and you go and they've just got rabbits and guinea pigs everywhere, and unfortunately there's not as much education about that and welfare considerations for these small pets, but I think it's just as important. These pets are still being raised in squalid conditions, overcrowded, pumping out little babies for sale, and then there's the welfare of those pets then going home and potentially not being looked after as well as they should be.
So the wish from this round table discussion, I think we're all in agreement, is that this needs to stop, and we talk about some clues and things to do that, but is it up to government to actually make some changes, some legislative changes to make this happen?
I don't think we can put everything on government. Mm. I definitely think they have a role in through legislation and listening to the community. But I think this is a joint problem. It has to be people in the industry. It has to importantly be pet owners who are driving the demand for these things to take responsibility, and government to support that through legislative frameworks.
Okay, that's really good. Belinda, did you have something that you wanted to add just as we move on? We're about to go to break.
Yes, look, there's, if you have time, Google an absolutely brilliant piece of actual footage called The True Price of Pet Shop Puppies on the Animals Australia.
Is it very
website.
Upsetting?
No, it's not. But it shows actual footage of the puppy farmer in Kerrang loading puppies into the back of the ute and their journey to the actual pet shop window, and there's a big sticker on the window saying we do not support puppy farms. There's footage of inside that puppy farm that had 400 dogs. There's the puppies being loaded and they're going in, blow dried by the pet shop staff and into the window. It's brilliant. So it's not upsetting, but it's good to watch.
Okay, it's good awareness. Just before we go to break, I do want to touch on probably one of the, in Victoria particularly, the highest, I suppose, brand awareness industry is the RSPCA in animal. Are they doing enough?
I don't think they are. Sorry.
No, go for it.
Yep. I think, you know, that they are such a big brand and they have opinions on different things, and I really think they could be doing big campaigns about awareness of you know, puppy shops and puppy farmers and even scrupulous breeders as well, you know. They really need to be doing that much more.
And what can we do? Can we do anything about that, or is that something that you know, continually write to the RSPCA to tell them about? Or
I think we could all pretty much get together, maybe set up campaigns to do that, just like any other campaign. Yeah. But again, it's one person has a small voice, but if we can all band together, you know, with the strength of the RSPCA or the like, it can come to fruition, definitely.
We are talking about the pet revolution, and Hungry Like the Wolf, Duran Duran, was the choice of one of our guests today, Kerry Bradley from Doggydom, who's Australia's leading expert in nutrition, hence the Hungry Like the Wolf. Very good. Very appropriate, I thought.
Very appropriate.
And a good song.
Good song. Love Duran Duran.
I love that song. We're here, obviously, Kerry Bradley from Doggydom, Dr. Kelly Halls from Benton's Road Veterinary Clinic in Mount Martha, Trish Harris from Four Paws Canine Training, I should say, and Belinda Goyarts from Pugs, SOS and Mornington Lodge. We've had a wonderfully robust discussion today. But the one of the things that I was thinking about for today's show, I thought it was unusual that there are four women, me including being fifth, but I'm not an expert in the field, far from it, but four women. And I thought to myself, is that normal? Like, is it an industry that is attracting women or not?
I think absolutely. You'll find that it's a very female-dominated industry. And I think it actually reflects the more likely pet owners as well. We have about 64% of the population are more likely to own a pet.
And you've got some stats there, Kerry. I know that you've bought some stats on pet ownership.
Yes, I like a few stats,
I know,
Jackie.
I like stats too.
Yes. So, yeah, they're definitely more likely to be female. And actually, from a generational point of view, they're more likely to be Gen Y. And then followed by Gen X. And
I thought
that was really interesting, because I sort of thought maybe a lot of older people with companion animals.
Yeah.
But no, it's definitely moving to younger generations.
Oh, okay. Dr. Kelly Hall's from a local vet. Do you find that? Are you finding that there are a lot more younger people having pets now than older people? Or not? You haven't seen it?
I don't think I've seen it. Yes, you definitely have younger people having pets, but we've still got heaps of people who are older, more senior having pets. I do think, though, that the decision-making in a household is always from the female of the family. So the wife, the mother, girlfriend is the one who actually makes decisions about where that pet comes to for healthcare, you know, what they're going to feed their pet, where they're going to go for training. It is the woman who does make the decisions in the household.
That's interesting. And so from the veterinary world, I'd imagine it would be male-dominated. Is that the case or not?
Not anymore, no. It previously was, yes, a male-dominated field hugely. But I know, you know, the classes that are graduating these days are, you know, predominantly female. I'm trying to remember the numbers back at my class. I think it was something like 80% female.
Really?
In the class.
And what about you, Trish Harris, from a training perspective? Is it male or female-dominated? Is there any one or the other or mixture?
No, definitely more female orientated.
As well.
Absolutely. And just like Kelly, when I did my course way back when, it was a bit half and half and a lot more male orientated.
Yeah.
But it's shifted very heavily. I was actually having this same conversation last night over dinner people just saying, oh, do you find there's so many more female trainers out there? And there definitely are.
What about you, Belinda Goyarts, in your rescue work? Is it
in the rescue
women?
World, I would definitely say mainly women, yes. In the boarding kennel world, I only know of husband and wife teams that operate facilities. However, all my staff are women.
Why is that?
Well, they are more likely to sit on the ground and hand feed a dog and wipe pooey bottoms and notice that a dog's just not looking quite right. Yeah. They're very good because, I would say, because of families and maternal instincts and used to bringing up children, and it just transcends beautifully to looking after our guests.
Yeah. Now, Trish Harris, another question I have for you is, it seems to be a bit of a trend, there's lots of trends going on in the pet industry, but that everyone sort of does a course and then all of a sudden they become a dog whisperer. Are you finding that, or is that, if I just keep coming across these people that are claiming to be dog whisperers?
Jackie, that is my pet hate.
Oh, is it? And pet hate, it's a good use of, yeah, good use of language.
Like, pardon the pun. Yeah. We see it all the time. Again, it's someone that, you know, there are some great dog training courses out there, but people doing a dog training course and then coming out 5 minutes later and labelling themselves as behaviour experts or behaviour specialists, yeah, it's really scary.
Mm. I think worse still is people watching television programs about dog training.
Oh, Caesar Milan, of
yes.
course.
Is unfortunately, classic? You know, and that's where the dog whisperer thing actually comes from. There are a number of people in the industry. Just be careful and look for the person's qualifications.
Yeah, so that instant expert.
They can do damage to your dog.
Yeah.
Yes, the dog whisperers. Kerry, we spoke about that. I had a client contact me a little while ago who was quoted by a dog whisperer $2,500 for some training sessions and, offered them all sorts of outlandish guarantees. Just absolutely amazing.
Wow. We're coming to the end of our show. I've loved every second of it. I wish it could go a bit longer, but unfortunately we're about to get to the end of it. And we've been talking about a revolution today in the pet industry. We've had with us, I'd like to thank Kerry Bradley from Doggydom. Always good to have you in the studio, Kerry. And if people want to find out more information on pet nutrition and how they could help increase their pets' enjoyment of life and longevity and health, where could they find more information?
They can find more information on doggydom.com.au or on any of my social media channels under the name of Doggydom.
Excellent. I know you've got recipes and tips on what to feed and what not to feed and things like that. And yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, or they can speak to Kelly.
Oh, yes, here we go. And that leads us very nice segue. Dr. Kelly Halls from Benton Roads Veterinary Clinic in Mount Martha. Great to have you on the show, Kelly. Your first time on the radio. Incredible. You're a natural.
Thank you.
You're a natural. See, another pun. You get that?
Yeah. Right, okay, into the natural.
Yeah,
thing.
Love
it.
Thanks again. Trish Harris from Four Paws Canine Training, thank you very much for coming on the show today. Good to have you back.
A pleasure. Thank you.
And Belinda Goyards, continue the good fight, Belinda, from
Pugs
SOS and Mornington Lodge. Loved having you on the show. We hope you've learned something new today, and we've helped to create some awareness about the good and bad and the ugly of the growing industry in pet. We look forward to your company next Friday at 11 a.m. In the meantime, keep taking care of your business.